This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast.
And here we go, here we go.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com. Broadcasting around the world.
Around the world.
We have the latest on KU recruiting, analysis, and what the coaches and players are saying behind the scenes. Here are your hosts, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers, and we are back with another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. It's another football-only edition, and we're going to be joined by KU football color analyst and former Jayhawk offensive lineman, the man, Mr. David Lawrence. We'll talk about the almost upset that would have been just an earth-shaking event in college football last week when KU just fell short against number two Oklahoma. We're going to preview this weekend's matchup against the Oklahoma State Cowboys, and we're also, as always, going to talk some recruiting. With that, let me go ahead and bring in my partner, the publisher of Jayhawk Slant and the man on the Kansas football beat, Mr. John Kirby. John, have you recovered from that game against OU last weekend yet?
Man, that was a great game. You know, it really was. Man, Randy, I know, listen, being around the players, you know, I talked to Mike Nowitzki today and, you know, he's like, mm-hmm. Hey, this is a loss. Okay. But you know, deep down, and I get that. And Leipold was the same way, but deep down. Okay. We all know you've seen it. I've seen it. The programs here at Kansas that have started down low and been built up over time from coaches, these are the kind of games that were played, right?
Exactly.
There were some heartbreakers. There were games that, golly, you're like, man, they competed. These are the type of games and these are the type of signs that show that the program is improving, that the program's going in the right direction. I know a lot of times people may not see it, but these are the signs when you look back at Mason's and Mangino's teams and some of the successful teams that Kansas has built over time, even as they were taking over programs in bad shape and building them up. These are the type of games, you know, that those guys played that were signals to everybody that things are going in the right direction.
I think you're right. And I think that this game, the game against Oklahoma, is the first tangible proof that Kansas fans have that there is a sea change. Not that there's been a sea change, but the sea change is literally happening before our eyes, because as we've talked about so many times, I mean, this staff is still getting to know their players. They're still installing systems on offense and defense and how they travel and how they approach game day and everything. And in the midst of that, they're playing a Big 12 schedule where they play everybody and have to take on the number two team in the nation. And to see that kind of an effort against Oklahoma on a Saturday when, you know, just a few days before when we recorded last week's episode of the podcast, you and I, we just skipped picking a score because we didn't think there was any chance. Neither of us had. If I would have tried to tell you that that was the kind of game we were going to see on Saturday, you would have laughed me off the podcast and probably said, you know, Randy, I think we need to talk about your role on the slant going forward.
That's right. We need to get you a psychiatric evaluation.
No doubt. Because, I mean, it came out of nowhere. And I think what was really amazing was watching the interest start to build and people kind of, you know, picking up on Twitter, what's happening in Lawrence, Kansas? What is going on right now? And you know, I know we'll mention it at some point, but I want to do it first. Credit to Kansas Athletics for putting out the word on Twitter, on Facebook, everywhere, basically saying, hey, come to the stadium, whether you got a ticket or not, you're walking in the door, be a part of this. That was just brilliant on their part to take advantage of, you know, just a great atmosphere and something really, you know, that could have been just a monumental event. And it still is a tremendous indicator of exactly what's going on with that program. And, you know, it makes you wonder what's going to happen against an Oklahoma State team that some people will tell you is much better than Oklahoma, especially on defense. But, I mean, it was, there aren't a lot of words for it. It was crushing to see it end the way that that game did, with, you know, obviously a call that is now infamous And, you know, I wondered if we were going to get a repeat of the, you know, dollar signs after the game, like we heard from Mark Mangino so many years ago.
Oh, we were, hey, listen, that was talked about in the press box. And, hey, listen, I tweeted during the game that, you know, the crowd's grown a little bit here, like right before half, right? That's usually when sometimes the crowds are thinning out. And then in the third quarter, fourth quarter, I'm going, these are the biggest crowds they've had all game. In the third and fourth quarter, it just kept growing. But, you know, Randy, it's interesting. We skipped picking scores last week because not just you and I, okay? If there's a fan out there, a KU fan out there, that says, oh, I knew they'd play them close or whatever, somebody's lying to you.
But no doubt.
If you would have told me last week, and I don't remember every stat from the game, but if you would have told me last week that Kansas wins the turnover battle, more total yards, dominates time of possession by almost 11 minutes, and punts once. I think it was just one punt, okay? I would have told you, you're nuts. I would have told you, you are just absolutely crazy because there's no way that's going to happen.
You're exactly right. I mean, I was listening to, you know, Coach on the Coach's show, obviously, today, and I just kind of kept thinking about it. I mean, I think the stat was they were maybe 9 of 13 on third downs. I mean, they played so well, and they put themselves in a tremendous position to be able to win that game and to have it come down to a third and long conversion on a freakish, you know, lucky play that many people have said should have been blown dead ahead of time. It's a terrible way to see it go down.
Well, you talk about the third downs. I want to say at one time they were 7 of 8. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there was one time there where it was just like they were converting third downs like it was no big deal.
They dominated the first half. I mean, there was no question about it. I mean, Kansas was in complete control at halftime. And a large part of it was, yeah, they converted every third down they came up on. And Jason Bean played fantastic. I mean, I really wasn't sure what we had other than a tremendous sprinter that, you know, with a scattershot kind of arm that maybe, you know, over time could really develop. He was as composed. In fact, I never could have pictured him being that composed in that situation as he was on Saturday. It was, like I said, I mean, it was a fantastic game, but it sure was hard to take the way it ended. Well, it's always a good time to talk to our good friend David Lawrence. We're going to go ahead and head on over to the studio line where John Kirby has Kansas football color man and Jayhawk great David Lawrence joining us now.
Thanks, Randy. I'm going to bring in our guest for the Inside Slant podcast, one of our favorites, David Lawrence, to talk about KU football. You can always hear him calling the football games. David, how you doing?
John, I am well, and it's great to be on with you, and I enjoy your stuff, and I enjoy the feedback that a lot of the true blue football fans out there are on your site, so I love hearing what they have to say.
Well, I want to hear what you have to say, because, I mean, it wasn't a win, but Saturday had to be, you know, an eventful day for you guys in the booth. Just take me back what it was like calling that game and just your thoughts as the game keeps going on and, you know, KU's leading and then they're right there in the lead. Just talk about the day.
Well, it was exciting. You know, I've been asked several times, did you expect this? I expected us to have a game like this. I didn't necessarily know it was going to be against Oklahoma. But I go to practice once a week, and let me tell you what, the practices are on point. You know, in comparisons to the previous regimes, and I've been going to practices going back to Don Fambro, I mean, they are full of energy. They are full of energy. And, you know, maybe the one that stands out to me more so is, you know, what happened the previous game against Texas Tech, and I think it's mostly that our quarterback didn't play anywhere near what he did on Saturday. But it was exciting, you know. I knew that we were going to compete against a team, and, you know, Jason Bean that was on target and getting out there using his legs where he's comfortable, and then our defense making stops and getting a turnover. You had to know then that we were in this for the long run. And then when it really became serious is that after Oklahoma scored the opening drive of the third quarter, that we answered right back. And I thought, oh, this is on. This is on. So it was exciting. And given the fact of the situation, and I'm sure it's been discussed on your site, and how most of us feel that we should have had possession of the ball with about 2 minutes remaining, and given the fact that we had just marched down the field in just a few plays and a couple of minutes, that we feel we'd have had an opportunity to take the lead and win the game. But that did not happen. But I'm excited about our guys. And I've been in it the whole year on the long run. Been excited throughout the season, and know that, you know, the loss that disappointed everyone the previous week against Texas Tech, I mean, that's just a tiny little blip in the what we hope is going to be a long tenure for Lance Leipold. So, but yeah, that was a fun day until the end.
You know, you mentioned something, David. You know, you get a chance to watch practice. You know, there aren't a lot of people that get that opportunity. And I know you can't sit there and give out every detail, what you see kind of behind the scenes, but just give everybody just a general term of what is it? Is it organization and fundamentals? Just what is it you see that you like, you know, overall?
Good question. And what I can tell you, John, is it's just tons of energy. And I mentioned that to Lance. I don't talk to him in practice, but I saw him at Hawk Talk. And I said, Coach, that was a great practice. And he says, why'd you think that? And I said, there was so much energy. He says, you didn't see that in previous years? I said, not like that. And, you know, I think the go-to when you look at practice, and you've been to a lot of practices through the years, John, that you know, look at the scout teams, the guys that, you know that they're not going to play a big part of the game. And usually it's just a, you know, find a way to motivate them to give the best picture they possibly can to your offense or defense, whether it be, you know, rewarding them. I've seen it all, rewarding them with better food or compliments, or you really get on them and scream at them and, you know, that whole thing. And they just don't have to do that. These guys are plugged in. They are all in. And I'm not saying that, you know, there's not a single person that's got issues or upset or whatever. I mean, we're talking about a 100-member club. There's always going to be that, but you don't see that at practice. So just very fast pace. Every minute is accountable. And even during breaks, there is instruction going on. That's what I see.
All right. We are through 7 games. I mean, what are some of the encouraging signs that you see?
But, you know, I tweet about as often as we have national holidays, maybe not that often, but I tweeted about Coach Fuchs. The offensive line, and your listeners and people that you're in contact with, they know about the mauling that took place in Norman, Oklahoma last year. And we saw the same cast of characters come to Lawrence. And we have a couple of different pieces, Nowitzki and Ford, but the other guys, you know, they're from, you know, the previous regime, and they were there last year. You can't tell me that that's just phenomenal to me that took place. And it all is about, and I was not impressed in the South Dakota game. Don't get me wrong. I was like, oh my gosh. But you know what? They didn't have spring ball. They didn't have spring ball. And it just took them some time. But man, Coach Fuchs is just, I called him the magic man. How do you do that in 1 year without spring ball? Have a group of guys pretty similar to the cast that we had last year go out and have so much success. And certainly it helps have Jason Bean. It helps have Devin Neal. And they're just helping each other. They're getting more confident together. but it's all working. And, you know, I mean, probably Jason is he's the figurehead, right? There's a reason why we pay so much attention to that, because he does make a difference. And he had a rough week the previous week, and he had his best week last week. And he used the offensive line, Devin Neal, and his receivers that are blocking better as well. And I don't want to leave out Cardell and Fairchild. They also did a very good job, much better. And Spencer Rowe in blocking and providing the protection and the gaps for Devin.
You know, David, we're a little over halfway. Okay. And let's face it, you know, on paper, the Jayhawks are probably going to be underdogs, double digit underdogs the rest of the way. But what can this team accomplish just in the little things throughout the rest of the season?
Great question. It's just staying the course. And, you know, you're online at the presser today. I mean, you could see that Chris Leipold, he wasn't any different than the previous week. And that previous week when it was a disappointment, he wasn't any different than the week before. I mean, he's just the same thing. He's got a tried and true system, a product that he knows or a system that he knows is going to produce. And that's where he's going. And he probably doesn't know exactly, you know, does that turn into one win, two wins, zero wins, or close games like Oklahoma? We don't know. But having an opportunity to win in the fourth quarter, and, yeah, we know that Oklahoma State is a team that I think is about as good as Oklahoma. They did lose last week. We are going to Stillwater. I get that. But this team's going to show up, and they're going to do that each and every week. A lot has to do with a quarterback, you know, and if he can continue to make improvements, because – John, I think you would agree with this. I mean, no one gets the edge better than Jason Bean. And when he can get the edge like that, it opens up the door not just to run the football around the perimeter, but also to pass. It buys yourself a couple of counts to look over your receivers, and he has been on target. I mean, last week he was exceptionally on target, and that led to that proficiency on third down. 9 of 13, I mean, that's the stat that jumps out over all the others. That was the difference maker, is that third down stat that we were able to do. And can we continue to see that improvement? I don't know. Why not? Is there a limit, you know, considering this is just 1 year without a spring ball? Yes, there is a limit out there. But if you're not excited about the future and the culture of Lance Leipold and what he's going to mean to Kansas football, then you know, you should probably join another site. But I'm guessing your guys, you got the hardcores on your site, and they're in for the long run, and they've seen some people that have achieved far less, and I know they've got to be excited for the future of Kansas football.
Well, David, you are really appreciate you joining us on the Inside Slant podcast. As always try to get you on when we can get you on, because everybody likes to hear what you have to say. And hey, have a good call down in Stillwater.
Yeah, and we got to punt better, right? Because that matters a lot. We will have to punt the football. We didn't have too much on Saturday. We've got K-State coming to town in the future, and we know it's all about those special teams. So that's one area we've got to see a big improvement. But, yeah, so many things to be excited about in the future, and we are. I am excited about going to Stillwater and see what we can do against those Pokes.
All right, David, man, have a good one. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. All the best.
You know, like I say, it's always awesome to hear from the man, David Lawrence. Kirby, what do you take away from that OU game? I mean, I know we've already talked about it a lot, but what are the most important things that you saw, as whether it's signs of where the program is, where it's heading, or just the impact that this staff is having so far through their tenure on this program?
You know, Randy, probably the biggest thing to me was, well, two things. Number one was physicality. And mm-hmm. I just didn't think Kansas could play with Oklahoma in terms of a physical style. And they did. And they didn't do it just for a little bit. They did it for four quarters. Okay, now I know Oklahoma's offense got going there in the second half. You know, it's interesting. People go, oh, Oklahoma was sleeping, okay? I'm telling you what now. Well, if you're sleeping, okay, then they slept for an entire half, okay, because Kansas hit them in the mouth. They really did. You know, another thing that impressed me, Oklahoma comes out, they go down, they score. Jayhawks answer the score. I mean, it's yes. little things like that where you go, okay, they just didn't cower and fall over. Listen, we've watched a lot of KU teams in the past that once Oklahoma gets something going, they're going to fold like a cheap suit, right? I mean, so they answered that. They kept fighting back. I thought, you know, KU tackled well. I thought the blitz with Kyron Johnson coming up the middle, playing a middle linebacker, showed some different wrinkle from Brian Borland. I thought they got Bean out on the run a lot. Listen, Oklahoma was starting to bring pressure. They were bringing some fast guys out of the secondary on some blitzes. They could not catch Jason Bean. I thought the offense, they were doing some more motion. They had some misdirection going. And, you know, I don't know this. I don't know where they're at, Randy, in terms of installing the full playbook. I don't know if they're at 70% or really they have everything they're going to get in, or whether Andy Kotelnicki just kind of started dialing up some different things. But I'm telling you, they had Oklahoma on their heels. And, you know, you'd start taking Bean, who's a 4-4, 40 guy, and you start getting him out in open space, and you get the run game going, and the offensive line's blocking better, and receivers were running open. I know Oklahoma is banged up in the secondary. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, there were some, when you go back and watch the game, I went back and watched it Sunday morning, there were some routes where Jason Bean had his choice of two and three receivers sometimes who were wide open. Oklahoma was not pressing them. So, you know, the game to me was, like we touched on earlier, it was a huge sign that Kansas showed fight. And then when the going got tough, they kept fighting. Okay, they didn't back down. They didn't fold. So, to me, those are some big things.
This Saturday, obviously, the Jayhawks move ahead with a trip to Stillwater with, you know, the other half of the Oklahoma component, the Oklahoma contingent, excuse me, in the Big 12, taking on Oklahoma State. Kirby, what are your thoughts on the matchup with the Pokes, and how about a prediction for this one, too?
Yeah, you know, so if people are correct in that Oklahoma came in flat and, you know, it was a little bit of a cloudy day and, you know, maybe they came in quote-unquote sleepwalking like I've had some people from Oklahoma tell me, that's not going to happen Saturday night, okay? I mean, Oklahoma State is not going to be sleepwalking. They're going to be at their place. It's a night game. They're coming off of a loss to Iowa State, their first loss of the year. Listen, Oklahoma State's defense, this may be the best front seven in the Big 12. Okay, so Kansas is going to have to answer the challenge. They're going to have to do a lot of the things that they did last week to stay in this game. But, you know, Randy, last week you asked me something about what do you do going into the Oklahoma game. And I told you, you go in, you play hard, you don't give up, you play with max effort, you learn, you keep learning where this program is at, you fight, you see what a good team like Oklahoma is going to be, okay? You don't take the game lightly. You don't let up just because you're a 39-point dog at home, and they didn't. And I keep saying this, now take that down to Stillwater, okay? Maybe they don't win the game. Maybe they're not within 14 points, but maybe they can push Oklahoma State. Maybe they can compete. Maybe they can challenge them. Maybe they can win a quarter or two. You see what I'm saying? I mean, listen, mm-hmm. they're 31-point underdogs. But that doesn't mean you can't keep getting better and keep progressing as a program, because that's what they did against Oklahoma. So I say this, go in with the same mindset that you did against Oklahoma. And, you know, maybe it's not as close, but you can keep building if you lose. I know people don't want to hear that and don't buy it. And I could tell being around the players, they want to win. But I've watched football teams get better and show they're better even if they don't win. I mean, I remember 2004 when, God, there were so many losses to good teams in the fourth quarter. But you left the stadium and you went, these guys are getting better. And that's where I think Kansas needs to keep going, is they need to keep showing that they're improving. Listen, you got to keep building on this. Jason Bean said that today. You got to take this Oklahoma game and keep moving forward. What you can't do is play this really good game against Oklahoma, okay, and then come play two or three bad games, because you don't want to digress. You want to take this and keep moving forward. I just think that, you know, I don't know how good Oklahoma State is on offense. This is such a rare Mike Gundy team, okay? In the past, what do we know? We see them huddle up. They hurry up. They play tempo. I remember some of those Oklahoma State teams were snapping the ball every 13, 14 seconds. They were spread out. They had great skill players, good quarterbacks. Well, this is different. They've got a really good defense, maybe the best in the Big 12, okay? The offense isn't as explosive. They're physical. The running back is really good. He's tough to bring down. So, you know, this is a game that Oklahoma State is, listen, they're a 31-point favorite like we touched on earlier. So, hey, if I got to go with a score, just thinking that Oklahoma State's going to come out there and probably, you know, you're not going to catch them sleeping. This is going to be their A game. I'm going to say Oklahoma State 38, Kansas 20. Give me yours.
I think a little bit closer, or at least I was starting to. I was going to go 31-20, but now there's, gosh, I'm gonna say 34-20. I think Kansas has some success, but that, like you talked about, that Oklahoma State front seven is so good, and they are very fast on defense, and they are physical. That's not saying that Oklahoma wasn't, but OU's defense has been the problem for seemingly so many years in Norman. They are not particularly physical, and they're not always matchup sound. As a lot of Sooners fans will tell you, when it comes to that secondary, they don't cover particularly well. I think Oklahoma State is a much better defense. I think that it will be interesting to see if there's not a little bit of a hangover from last week. And that's not saying that they can't match that kind of effort or that they're going to take a step back. I just think it's natural to have a little bit of a regression after what was essentially a shock to the system for the Big 12. Like you mentioned, I mean, Oklahoma State, we're not playing them at 11 a.m. in Lawrence. We're playing them at night down in Stillwater. That place is going to be rocking. They're going to be ready. You're not going to surprise the Cowboys. So well, I think that it's going to be a little bit tougher this time around.
Well, I watched Gundy's press conference, and somebody asked him about the Big 12 race. And he kind of looked at the reporter and was like, are you kidding me? Like, Big 12 race, we can't even think about a Big 12 race. We got a team coming in here this week that just took Oklahoma to the final minutes. And you could tell he was like, we are ready for Kansas. We have to be ready to play Kansas. So I agree with you on the whole part of the role reversal, that Oklahoma State will not be like Oklahoma. I mean, they will be ready to play.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would love to see it be closer than a 34-20, but I think that's where we're headed to. All right, Kirby, I'm going to touch on a subject that is starting to pick up some steam and discussion over in the Memorial Slant Suite, as well as, you know, around Kansas football fans around the country, and that's that portal. The constant discussion of the portal and its impact on college football, Kansas fans are starting to wonder just how it could maybe benefit them this year, as opposed to taking away what we saw so much talent depart after last season via the portal. Really seems to have fired up to another level over the last week or so as it gets later in the calendar year. I'm going to give you the floor, and I want you to tell us how the portal will, you know, how the staff is going to utilize the portal, I should say, and not just for players coming from other Power Five or four-year programs. How are things going to work with junior college recruiting as well?
Yeah, Randy, you know, and I get it. There are some of the hardcore Kansas football fans that they have watched over, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, you know, the staffs go transfer, blue shirt, JUCO, and it hasn't worked, okay? But that's because it's gone over several different staffs in several different years. And what I mean by that is, once they started going the junior college route, all right, Charlie Weiss started it, and then he did it his first year, and then he did it more second year. And then during that, he ran off, you know, several players, so they got in a hole, okay? Mm-hmm. And then when they had to go to Beatty, Beatty almost had no choice but to go down that rabbit hole because of what he inherited, and it kept going there. And, you know, a lot of people go, hey, Miles came in and didn't do any of that. Go back over Miles' first class, okay? And if you look at his first class, Miles came in with some JUCO guys in his first class. So the times have changed. Kansas fans need to understand, this isn't 2012. It's not 2015. The COVID, the giving years back to junior college players, the portal, it has changed everything. Kansas fans need to get that out of their mind, okay? This is a different day. It's a different age of JUCO players now having 3 years of eligibility. A bunch of these JUCO players that I've talked to, a lot of them are graduating at mid-year because they got an extra year of education with the COVID year. So people have got to understand, this isn't the portal and junior college transfers that you know. It's different, okay? I also believe that guys like Leipold, Iannello, the guys on the inside, they have a plan. They know what they're going after, okay? You know, Randy, the great thing is, and I was talking with a college coach the other day about this, the evolution of Zoom, okay? Everybody knows how to Zoom now. Every player does. Every parent does. I've heard that you now can get on and Zoom with these guys, okay? You can do it for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You can get to know these kids. Whereas back in the day, you went out and you visited them at their house, and then they came in for a visit, you got them committed. You can have these Zooms now. You can have their parents on Zooms. It's totally different now than it was. Listen, Kansas has, somebody told me this the other day, they've got the fourth youngest D1 roster in the country and the youngest Power 5 roster in the country, okay? So when you have that, you can go get some transfers. You can go get some junior college players. Because in the past, a lot of times when Kansas has gone out and done that, they've done it with older rosters or not a lot of young players. Well, when you go out and get transfers and start blue-shirting guys and taking people from the next class and getting junior college guys who might have 2 years of eligibility, then when you don't have younger players, it makes it a lot more difficult. Now, there's some challenges, okay? When you play the portal game now, you go in, you visit a kid, you bring him in, you spend an official visit on him, you bring him in, let's say December 15th. He commits to you, okay? Well, let's say January 10th, some other school decides, let's say maybe they lose a player at that position, and then they go after the guy who's committed to you. Well, a transfer isn't bound by the LOI, so they can get up and leave whenever they want. So, you know, there's some challenges with portal guys, but here's the bottom line, and Kansas fans have just got to, they've got to get this in their head. This staff is going to go after some junior college players, okay? Just before we started the podcast, they offered the kid down at Coffeyville, the corner, very talented player, and he's got several offers. And they're going to go after kids in the portal. So this is the year to do it. I really believe that because of the youth that you have. And you can go get kids who have been in a junior college, who've been lifting in a JUCO system for 2 years, who have been playing against junior college football players who are bigger, stronger. You can see what they do against those guys. You can go get guys in the portal who've been playing Division I football. They understand what it's like. They've already been going through the grind of a Division I program. So you can strengthen your roster. Here's where it's different. Okay, number one, the rules are different. Number two, I believe Kansas has the people in place, and these guys have plans. I mean, these guys are detailed. They are very organized, and they're just not going to go out and reach to get guys. I mean, they're going to do their homework. So my message to Kansas fans, I know people are starting to come up and say, golly, are you really going JUCO? Or, you know, how many portal guys? Hey, listen, it's not going to be like an entire class or anything, but they're going to go find and fill the holes And they're still in an evaluation process right now. So they are still looking and they're going, okay, maybe we need one lineman. Okay, maybe we need two backers. Maybe by the end of the year, if some of these linebackers play better, they may come back and say, you know what, we just need one backer. So this is going to be an ongoing process over these last several games where they're still evaluating their talent and figuring out what to do.
Kirby, I want to wrap this thing up with, a question that we always talk about recruiting, and I know there haven't been a lot of new names coming up for the class of 2022. How many more high school prospects do you think we could see Lance Leipold's staff and be able to pull in their first recruiting class in Lawrence with the amount of time that they're looking at right now?
Yeah, Randy, I think the focus is for 2022 is primarily, I believe, going to be on the JUCO portal guys. Now, Leipold and his staff got in here, really got going in May, okay? I think they've gone back to a few connections they've had at Buffalo. Livingston, who committed, the offensive lineman, that was a connection they had at Buffalo. But there's just not a lot of guys out there, okay? So when you're coming in 2022 class and you're coming in May as a staff, you're already several months behind everybody else who's already gotten the head start on 2022. Mm-hmm. But if you notice the Kansas staff now, look at the offers they're putting out to 2023 players. I mean, there was three more today. So 2023 is going to be the high school class. So, there's not a lot of names surfacing in the portal. I promise you right now, they are talking to several players in the portal, okay? But those guys keep that information close to the vest. I'm talking about the recruits, the players. A lot of times the players will not come out and tell you who's offered. They're not going to tell you if they're taking a visit. Now, at some point here, I think maybe mid to late November, you start getting an idea, maybe some guys that may take a visit to campus. But it'll be portal guys. And hey, I do want to throw a shout out to your alma mater, Shawnee Mission Northwest.
Yes.
Hey, listen, that's a walk-on. That's a preferred walk-on who, listen, Scott Fuchs really liked him. So, you can also go get some walk-ons here local and look at that, that area of the class. And I think he's a good addition.
I do too. Cale Fargus is a guy that has been an all-state honoree on both sides of the ball. As an offensive lineman, as a defensive lineman, I messaged back and forth with him a little bit yesterday after his commitment. And he said that Scott Fuchs wants, they want him to come in and play as an interior offensive lineman, which I can totally see him developing as a guard or a center. He is a tough, physical kid that is, he has the mentality that I think is perfect for the kind of kids that they want to have in this locker room. Will he develop into anything? You never know. But I, as a proud Shawnee Mission Northwest alumni, I was very excited to see a guy from my alma mater, the first one at KU since Mike Rivera. And if he ends up like Mike, Mike played for five different NFL teams after a very good career and a great 4-year career after a redshirt in Lawrence under Mark Mangino. If Cale Fargus turns into that, I think we'll be pretty dang happy with this walk-on.
Listen, I've watched Shawnee Mission Northwest. I've watched them play 2 or 3 games, and I mean, they're fun to watch. They do some good stuff. Hey, Bo Black can coach. Bo Black offensively is probably about as good as any coach in the area. He puts together some really good schemes, and they can throw the ball around. They got number 13, and I don't know his name, but number 13, nobody can tackle him, and they've been fun to watch, and I've gone back and watched some of his film. So, hey, that's a good pickup, man. And, when we sit here, we haven't even talked about walk-ons. I'd like to see him focus on some of these local kids and try to get some walk-ons in the 2022 class.
Absolutely. And we've talked about it for so many years, and, obviously people and for good reason, people talk about the walk-on program at Kansas State. And I know Kansas fans don't want to hear about Kansas State, but you can build a walk-on program that regularly produces significant contributors to your program. People that are doing more than just playing special teams, that are starting on your offensive line, that may find a spot in your secondary, that develop into regular contributors at tight ends. Those kind of kids, you can't put a price on those contributions, not just what they do on the field as a non-scholarship player, but the way that they add to your culture in your locker room. And as we've talked about, culture is one of the most important things that this coaching staff is trying to instill right now. And if they find kids that they can bring in that are willing to earn their own way, essentially, and help instill the kind of mindset that Lance Leipold and his staff are looking to create in Lawrence, hey, more power to them. That is it for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. John Kirby and I welcomed our good friend David Lawrence, KU football sideline and color man, great former Jayhawk, to talk about the game against Oklahoma. We recapped the almost upset over the Sooners. We previewed this weekend's matchup against Oklahoma State. We talked about the transfer portal. We talked about high school recruiting. We talked about JUCO recruiting. And we talked about my buddy Scott Farkas. Excuse me, not Scott Farkas, Cale Farkas. Scott Farkas, the man from A Christmas Story. Cale Farkas, the newest offensive line commit for the Kansas Jayhawks from my alma mater, Shawnee Mission Northwest High School. We've run the gamut this evening. You've been listening to the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. John Kirby and I will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.